Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
So I don't know if you saw it, but this week the list of the most popular baby names in America came out. If you didn't see it and you don't know the answer, what do you think this year was the most popular name for a girl? Guesses? Stacy. It's actually Sophia, which I think you said. Maybe you did hear me first service. The most popular name for a boy? Boy name? It's Aiden was the most popular boy name. Now, some of the names are interesting because, like, some names go up in popularity because of pop culture influences. Like, the biggest riser this year of all the names was the name Pippa, which is up 45%, and makes sense because everybody was fascinated with the royal wedding, and Pippa was the daughter, the mysterious daughter. And for boys, two of the names that rose the most this year were Anderson and Cooper. Who knew that people were so into watching the news? I did not. But I think it was like a year or so ago that David and Victoria Beckham named their daughter Harper, and this year the name Harper shot up 34 spots in the most popular names. And one of the names that fascinated me that's popular is the name Jersey rose 16%, which is weird, but better than Snooki rising. That was, so I guess that's okay. So this series we're going to talk about names. We're going to be talking about names for the next few weeks, and names are interesting, and names tell you something. You know, when you know a name, it tells you something, and we're going to talk about some of the names of God in the Bible. Now, way back, people worshipped all different sorts of gods. They thought there were gods for all different things, and those gods had names, and those names meant something. So for instance, way back, some people worshipped the god Hergab, who was considered to be like the father of eagles. There was another god called Kirkbib, and Kirkbib was considered lord of the summer, of like the season and the summer. And there was Nikal, who was the goddess of fruit. And there's some really weird ones. Like, there was a god, Aftar, who was considered to be the god of artificial irrigation. I wish I was kidding, but I am not kidding. That's true. And so here at Verve, we believe that there is one God. But when you read the Bible, you discover that this one God goes by some different names. They're kind of nicknames, and those names mean something. As you learn those names, you learn something about God. We don't think much about names and what they mean, right? I mean, you use names, you call your friends by their names. If you do have a kid, you know, you have to choose a name, but typically we just pick a name that we like the sound of or after our favorite CNN personality. Apparently that's a big motivating factor. But we don't think much about names, but they do mean something. Like my name is Vince or Vincent, and my name means invincible. Tells you something about me. The guy who was up here a few minutes ago who welcomed you to the service, his name is Jake or Jacob, and that name means the deceiver. Tells you something about Jake. It's true. It is what his name means. But listen, there's all kinds of names, and you learn something by names and what people are called. Like let's say when you were a kid, maybe you called your father Daddy or Pops or whatever you called him. But let's say there was this one particular day where you went to work with him. And you were sitting in his office, and somebody walked into his office and said, "Hey, boss." And then after work, you went to practice with him, and one of the kids came up and said, "How you doing, coach?" And then let's say you went to dinner, and while you're eating, somebody came up to him, and it was someone he served in the military with, and this guy walks up and says, "Hey, lieutenant." And then the two of you went home, and when you walked in the door, your mother said, "Hey, honey." All those different names that your father recalled would tell you a lot about who he was and the different things he had done in life and who he was to different people. And in the same way, when we learn the names of God, it tells us a lot about who he is and what he's done and who he can be in our lives. I'm really excited about this series because this series is not about you. It's not about you. In this series, we're not going to give you, you know, 3 steps to a better marriage. We're not going to give you 7 principles for effective parenting. We're not going to give you 6-minute abs. You know, it's not about you. This series is just all about God. It's just going to be about God and his character, his strength, his holiness, his purity. It's just going to be about God. But the reality is, when you do a series that's all about God, man, you can't help but also make it all about you. Because God's all about you. Like, do you understand that God is constantly thinking about you? You're always on his mind. That God wants to be known, and so he has made himself known. And the reason is so that you could know him and have a relationship with him. And one of the ways that God makes himself known and reveals himself is through the names that he's called in the Bible. And we're going to look at those. And I'm excited because it's all about God. And I hope that it might help clear up some of the confusion we have about God. What happens with people, it's always happened, is that people kind of take God and they kind of make a stereotype out of him. You know, maybe they take one little aspect of who he is and they kind of blow it out of proportion. They take this big God, they put him in a little box, and they're like, that's God right there in that little box. You know, and they've always done this. Like one of the versions of God that people think of is called deism. Deism. Deism is this idea that God was the one who created everything, but then he just abandoned ship. You know, he just walked away. Like, it's almost as if God kind of pulled the cord on a self-propelling lawnmower and then just let the thing go. And this lawnmower of a world we live in is kind of like going all over the place, and eventually it's just going to run out of gas, and God doesn't care because he's kind of this absentee God. That's deism. There's another version of God, another kind of box that some people put him in that we could call genieism. Now, that's not like official technical. I made that up. But genieism would be the idea that, like, God exists to serve my needs. My wish is his command. And that's who God is. He takes care of us and makes our lives better. That's genieism. It may be the version of God that you worship. There's another version of God that we could call weekendism. It's this idea that God kind of lives in the church building, and if we're nice, we'll visit him on Sundays. You know, it's weekendism. Also, some people kind of have this idea of God, we could call it maybe ticked-off-ism. You know, God is this angry, ticked-off judge who's just waiting to find somebody guilty of some sin so he can just come down on you. It's ticked-off-ism. Another version of God is this kind of like out-of-touch grandpa-ism. It's this idea that God is kind of like, yeah, I used to be pretty hot stuff back in the day, you know, back in the Red Sea times, I could do some things, but, man, I'm kind of over the hill now, it's hard to get out of that chair, and, you know, I don't really do a whole lot these days, you know, I can't bother with it, and this idea that God's kind of like this grandpa, and he winks at our sin, and just goes, ah, kids will be kids, and it's kind of this grandpa-ism. Well, I hope that in these next few weeks as we explore four of the names of God, I hope that maybe we kind of break out of some of those boxes and we start to see God for who he is, and that by seeing God for who he is, we can have a relationship with him and we can worship him for who he is. So what I want to do this first day of the series is show you the first time that ever God reveals his name to a person. The first time God ever announces his name. And we find it in Exodus chapter 3. If you have a Bible, you can turn to Exodus chapter 3. If not, we'll put the verse on the screen here in a minute. You'll be fine. But in this story, in this scene, God reveals himself. He tells his name to this guy named Moses. Now, at this point in his life, Moses is a fugitive from the law in Egypt. Moses was this guy who, though he was Jewish, though he was an Israelite, he grew up in the palace of the king. He grew up like royal family, even though the Israelites were actually slaves in Egypt. But at this one point, Moses kills a man. They know who did it. They're after him. And so he runs away, and he's kind of living the life of a shepherd out in this area called Sinai. He's kind of a fugitive trying to hide out from Egypt. And that's where we're going to meet Moses, and that's when Moses meets God. So we're going to start in chapter 3, verse 1. We'll put it on the screen. It says, now Moses was tending the flock, as a shepherd, of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Now, we'll pause here because this idea of God asking Moses to take off his shoes because it's holy ground, it's an intriguing idea. One of my favorite preachers to listen to is a guy named Mike Bro. I've heard him teach on this passage, and I'm actually sharing a few of his ideas with you because he's smarter than I am. But one of the things he points out is, back in those days, when something was holy, you made sure to not touch it. If something was holy, you absolutely made sure that it did not touch your skin. And so God says, this is holy ground. What you would think is that God would say, Moses, put your shoes on. This is holy ground. It's not to be touched by skin. But God says the exact opposite. He says, Moses, take off your shoes, for this is holy ground. And I'm not sure why. Maybe it's almost as if God was saying, listen, Moses, I want to get close to you. And I want you to get close to me. I want intimacy with you. I want to go skin on skin. So take off your shoes. It's holy ground. Maybe. I don't know. But let's look at what happens next, starting in verse 6. Then God said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And this is just like God. So we have Moses. Moses knows his people, the Israelites, are back in Egypt and they're suffering as slaves. Moses remembers he killed a man. You know, he's responsible for a man's death back in Egypt. And you have to guess that probably all of that had been heavy on Moses' heart and in his mind ever since he was gone. And God shows up and says, listen, it's heavy on me too. And I hear the cries of my people who are in slavery. And it's time to do something. And you notice who's going to do something. It's real clear. God says, I have heard. I am concerned. I have come down. I am going to bring them up. I mean, God's the one who's going to do this, right? So let's continue the story in verse 9. He says, and now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be a sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you'll worship God on this mountain. So God says, listen, something needs to be done about this situation. So you go, and we're going to lead these people out of slavery. Moses says, who am I? Like, how could I possibly do this? I mean, I can't do this. And it's almost as if God says, were you not listening to me a minute ago? You're not going to do it. I'm going to do it. Remember, I'm the one who's concerned. I'm the one who's heard the cries. I'm the one who's going to come down. I'm the one who's going to bring them up. I'm the one who's going to rescue them out of slavery. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to use you to be a part of it. I'm the one who's going to do it. You know, what Moses is doing here by saying, how could I do this? It's almost like a paintbrush looking up at a great artist and saying, how can I possibly paint this beautiful painting? You're not going to paint it. You just need to stay in my hand, and I'll paint it. You just stay in my hand, right? And God's like, you're not going to be the one who does it. I'm going to do it. You're just going to be the paintbrush that's in my hand. By the way, this same principle holds true for you and I. If we'll just keep our lives in God's hands, man, he can do unbelievable things through us. Apart from him, maybe not so much. So look what happens in verse 13. Moses said to God, suppose I go, which let's pause here. That's kind of funny, isn't it? Like Moses is not like, okay, God, I'll do it. You're commanding me. I'm in. He's like, suppose I go. Like just hypothetically speaking, like let's just pretend that I was to go with this idea, God. You know, he's like, I'm not saying I'm going to. So it says, Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? And this is fun because it's like Moses thinks he has God stumped. He's like, I know how to get out of this. I know what the loophole is. And he says, God, I can't go because if they ask what your name is, I wouldn't know what to answer. So sorry, but I can't go. Like God's going to be like, oh, you're right, because I don't know my name either. Like, how can you possibly go? I can't answer that question. But that's not what happens. What happens is that God, for the first time in human history, tells someone his name. Okay? So here's the first name of God we're going to look at. Verse 14, God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. The word I am in the Hebrew language that Moses spoke and that this discussion is in is the word Yahweh. Yahweh means I am. And this is God's name. It's interesting. The Jewish people this time, after this happens, they lived in fear of saying the name of God. They felt like God was too holy to pronounce his name out loud. And so they would never say the word Yahweh. In fact, they wouldn't write the word Yahweh because they were afraid if it was on paper, someone might mistakenly read it out loud. And so what they would do, whenever they wrote the word, they would take out the vowels, making it an unutterable word, you know, Y-H-V-H. It's like, how do you say that? You can't. And so they would take out the vowels. If they wanted to write it in a way that someone could say it, what they would do is they would take the vowels out of another word, the word Adonai, which means Lord, and they would take the vowels out of Adonai, put them into the word Yahweh, or the consonants from Yahweh, and they came up with this word Jehovah, which was their way of being able to say God's name out loud. But his name is Yahweh. In the Old Testament alone, the word Yahweh appears 6,823 times. Okay, the way that it's translated in our Bible is the word Lord, but it's the word Lord in all caps. So as you read the Old Testament in the future, you're going to sometimes notice that there's Lord not in all caps, and then there's sometimes where the word Lord is in all caps. Anytime you see Lord in all capital letters, that's the word Yahweh being translated into English. All right, so let's look at the next verse, starting in verse 15. It says, God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, all caps, Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am to be remembered from generation to generation. So God says, listen, I am the same God who has always been, and I've always been I am. I am, and I will always be I am. In fact, I will be remembered and spoken about as I am for generations to come, for thousands of years. And here we are today, thousands of years later, doing the very thing that God predicts we'll be doing. So God says, my name is I am. And that tells us something about God, right? It makes a statement about God. It's like God is the I am. Like God has always been. He is and will always be. He is the self-existent one. He is I am. But like he didn't need anyone to bring him into existence. We did, right? That's why you have a belly button, right? Because you are dependent on someone else to bring you into existence. We all needed someone to lead to our creation. God did not. God is his own creator. He is. We need food to survive. God doesn't. We need electricity to give us energy and to give us power. God is his own energy source. We need, we need a sense of purpose. God is his own purpose. God is never afraid. He's never alone or lonely. He's never distracted. He's never in jeopardy. He never sleeps. He's never sick. He is I am. He is the self-existent, holy, awesome, and sovereign God of all. This name, Yahweh, it gives me some perspective on who God is, but it also gives me some perspective on who I am, right? Because if God is I am, then I am not, right? If he's I am, then I am not. Now, the problem is sometimes I think I am. In fact, sometimes I act like I am. And my guess is, I don't know all of you that well, but my guess is sometimes you think you are. And sometimes you act like you are, but I am not. He is I am. And it's a real problem. It really is a problem when I act like I am or think I am. And the problem is, I'm pretty sure that it's like the bigger I make myself, the smaller I make God. You know what I mean? Like the bigger I make myself, the smaller I allow God to be in my life. But the smaller I make myself, the bigger I allow God to be in my life. God can really be I am. He can really be Yahweh in my life. There's a scene in the New Testament where there's this guy named John. He was called John the Baptist. And John the Baptist was kind of the stuff for a while. Like everybody's coming to see him. They want to be around. They want to hear him teach. But there's this moment where Jesus appears on the scene. Now, Jesus was Yahweh. Jesus was the great I am, the eternal I am, come to earth, put skin on, living as a human, but he was Yahweh. And John the Baptist sees Jesus, and he points to him in front of all these people, and he says this great line that probably should be like our personal philosophy. He says, he must increase, and I must decrease. He's saying, he is I am. And it's really easy for me, in light of that, to recognize that I am not. I am not. You know, understand this name of God. It gives us some perspective on who God is, how big God is, and who we are, how small we are. But here's the amazing thing. The amazing thing is this. So I pray that everyone in this room has some of their own face-to-face kind of encounters with God, just like Moses did. See, what happens here with Moses is not like, oh, that's an Old Testament thing, or that's a Bible thing. God is still very real. He still shows up. He is still I am. He's still Yahweh. And he still has the ability to let us know him, and so that we can have encounters with him and have a relationship with him. And if you start having encounters with God, if you start realizing that God is not just someone to be studied, he's not someone to be read about in a book or you know, just to be learned about here in a church service. God is someone that I can experience and encounter and have a relationship with. As you get to know God and spend time with God and encounter God, you start to realize, whoa, he is big and awesome and powerful and holy and pure, and I am not. And you're impressed with who he is. But the amazing thing is this. The more you get to know God, this Yahweh, and how big he is and how small you are, the more you realize at the same time that he cares intimately about all the details of your life. It's really kind of, it's like mind-blowing. This big, eternal, sovereign God who needs nothing cares intimately about every little detail of my little life. It's crazy. There's this guy in the Bible named David. And man, you want to start talking about people who like really got to a place where they knew God. I mean, they had that kind of relationship with him. David had that. And David wrote a lot of the Psalms in the Bible. The Psalms are songs and poems written to God or about God. And in one of the Psalms, Psalm 139, David kind of talks about this idea. If you have a Bible, you can turn to one, Psalm 139. If not, we'll put the verse on the screen. But David is this guy who recognized God is Yahweh. He is big, sovereign, eternal. But somehow, he cares about every little detail of my life. Look what he writes, starting in verse 1. He says, O Lord. Do you notice it's all caps? He says, O Yahweh, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. So it's like he's saying, you know what? God, Yahweh, God, like the big God, the eternal God, the sovereign God, he knows when I go to sleep at night. He knows when I wake up in the morning. He knows when I brush my teeth. He knows during the day if I cross my legs. He knows when I pick my nose. He knows every little detail. Somehow, this big God is paying attention to everything that happens in my life. He writes, you perceive my thoughts from afar. It's like everything I think is also going through God's mind. He knows all of it. He says, you discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. It's like, you know, my itinerary was in God's head before it ever became my itinerary. God knew all about this day before I ever existed. Like, he knew everything that would happen to me, everything I would do. He's just like, it blows my mind. He writes, before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord, all caps Yahweh. He's saying, everything I've ever said, God knows. In fact, he knew it before I said it. And he knew what was in my heart and what was in my mind that led me to say it. Think about it. Like, God knew how difficult it was for you to say, I am sorry. God knew how unbelievably painful it was for you to say, I forgive you. Everything you've ever said. He writes, you hem me in, behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. He's saying, man, if I looked at every detail of my life going back, things I can't remember. You were there for all of it, and you knew about all of it. And not only behind, but in front of me, everything that's going to happen, you know all of it. It's like I'm living life in your hands. And I think at this point, like really thinking about this idea that God is Yahweh, and yet he cares about me, I think it's overwhelming to David. Like, I think his heart is like about to explode, and maybe there's tears in his eyes, because in verse 6 he writes, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's too lofty for me to attain. He's like, I can't think about it. It doesn't, like, I can't get my brain in tune with it, that this God who is so big and awesome cares about all the details of my life. Listen, this name Yahweh, it gives him perspective on who God is. But the amazing thing is that he cares about you. You matter to God. In fact, you matter so much to him that he sent his son, Jesus, for you. And Jesus came down and he put skin on and he lived as a man. And he walked the earth and he lived a perfect life. He lived a perfect life. And then he was arrested. Do you know why Jesus was arrested? It was because he claimed to be God. Do you know why Jesus claimed to be God? Because he was. Because he was. And he was arrested, and he was put on trial. And in the trial, questions were asked of him. Somebody said, so, are you the Christ? Are you the Messiah? Are you the Son of God? And Jesus answered very simply by saying, I am. And then he was put on trial before this Roman governor named Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate looked at him and said, so, are you a king? Jesus answered, I am. And then Jesus was crucified. He died for you. He died for you because it was the only way that you could be made right to be put back into a relationship with God. Because the whole point of our existence is to know and be in relationship with this Yahweh I am God. And so he died for us so that we could be made clean and brought back into a relationship with God. And he was buried in a tomb. But 3 days later, he walked out of the grave. And pretty soon he went back up to heaven. And in the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, we see Jesus in heaven. And sometimes in this book of Revelation, Jesus speaks from heaven. And one of the things he says, we'll put on the screen, is this. It's in Revelation chapter 21 and 22. He says, I am making all things new. I am the Alpha and Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. Come. Whoever is thirsty, let him come. And whoever wishes, let him take the free gift of the water of life. That's how much you matter to God. What you and I need in our lives is we need all things to be made new. Right? I mean, honestly, isn't that what you long for? You know, you look back at some of the mistakes you've made and some of the places you've been, and you're like, I just wish I could have a fresh start. You know, I wish that somehow, like my life could be made new. And Jesus says, listen, I am the one who can do that. I can make all things new. Right? And Jesus says, I also am what you thirst for. You know, all of us inside, we have like this soul thirst, you know? It's this like mysterious longing for something, and I can't identify what it is, but no matter what I get in life, no matter what I experience, it still seems to be there, that there's something missing. And Jesus says, I am what you thirst for. And listen, you and I, we need to know him. We need to know Yahweh. I am, because he's the only one who can make all things new in our life. And he's the only one who can give us what we thirst for. And not only do we need to know him, everyone needs to know him. Everyone needs to know him, because he is the answer to the questions people are asking. Now, I really think that people are out there asking, and they don't necessarily voice these questions, but it's driving them. It's inside of them. They ask questions like, man, is God real? Like, is there really a God? And if there is a God, can I know him? Is that really possible? And if I can know him, what's he like? I mean, is he kind of this ticked off police officer just looking for someone who's guilty so he can, you know, dole out punishment? Is he kind of an absentee landlord who just lets created us and lets it go and isn't watching anymore? Is he more like my grandpa and he just kind of winks and, you know, he's not really there, but he's kind of, what is he like? Have you met him? Like, do you really know him? And if so, how can I know him? How can I get connected to that God? And you and I, we have the honor, we have the privilege not only of knowing this God, Yahweh, who introduced himself to Moses all those years ago, the same God, but we have the honor and the privilege of being able to point people to that God, being able to help people find that God is the one that they're searching for. Because trust me, people are asking this question, who is God? Can I know him? Does he care about me? What is God's name? And the answer is, I am. He's Yahweh. He's I am, and he is what you are searching for. He's the answer to that question you've been asking. And you know, the reality is, he is the answer to so many of the questions that we're asking. Questions like, man, so who's going to make sure that someday good triumphs over evil? I am. How is this world going to find out about Jesus if he's what they need? I am. Who is smart enough to figure out this crazy life of mine? I am. If my husband really does walk out on us, who's going to take care of our family? I am. Man, is there any truth out there? Because it just feels like, really, is there any truth out there? I am. What if the chemo isn't enough? I am. Is there anybody listening to me? I mean, does anybody care? Does anybody hear what I'm saying? I am. And is there anyone who can make sense of this mess of a world that we live in? I am. God is the answer to all those questions we ask. He is Yahweh. He is I am. And he has always been, and he is, and he will always be. Let's pray to him. God, it really is unbelievable and kind of mind-bending to think that this God we see in this story with Moses from thousands of years ago is the same God that we came to talk about and meet with and sing to today. God, I want to thank you because you are Yahweh. You are the I Am, and you revealed yourself to Moses, and you're still revealing yourself to people this very morning. God, we need to know you. So many of us live with these misconceptions and stereotypes, and what we need is to really know you and who you are. So God, thank you for revealing yourself through all kinds of means, but including your names. God, would you help us to know you as I Am, as Yahweh, as the self-existent, holy, eternal, sovereign God. Thank you for being this big God that is trustworthy and is always there. And God, thank you that despite the fact that you're big and eternal, somehow you care intimately about the little details of our lives. Our thoughts, our words, our lives are never out of your sight. They're never out of your hands. God, thank you so much for loving us. I don't understand it. I still can't, figure it out, but you love us intimately. Thank you, and thank you for sending Jesus to love us, to show us the way, and to die for us that we might have life and that we might have a relationship with you, Yahweh. Thank you. And we pray in his name. Amen.